is Andy here, and today I'll do an interview with Ian King. Ian King is the top physical preparation coach in the world, most influential coach there ever was in physical preparation, had a long career of over 30 years, and we get right into it. So Ian, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks for the invitation, Andy.
Looking back at your career, Ian, what are the things in the last 30 years in our industry that have improved or which haven't?
Well, a lot of people expect that with the increases in technology that a lot of things have improved. And, you know, when you certainly look at your computer, when I started coaching, there were no computers other than some big machine in someone's room somewhere. So I've seen a lot of technological changes, as everyone. But I got to say that I don't believe those changes have been matched in sport. In fact, I'm not sure if there's been a lot of improvement, generally speaking, in training methods. There may be some advances in the rehabilitation tools, in surgery techniques for rehabilitating athletes from injury. But generally speaking, I think the advances have been a lot less than what, you know, you and I might have expected, or the average person might have expected.
And what's the reason for that?
Well, the interesting thing about sport is that, unlike a scientific study, you can't just change one variable and then monitor the outcome. And that's the basis of an objective assessment, because every day the athlete wakes up, they're a different person. Every day the weather is different. Every day their tension in their body is different. Every day they have a different thought. So we've got too many variables moving all the time. So it is very challenging to form cause-effect relationships, and you really need to monitor a large sample of athletes over a long period of time to make any conclusions, I believe. And therefore, there are not a lot of people who have had that opportunity to stay with a large group of athletes and over a long period of time and monitor them, because the nature of sport is typically, you know, coaches come and go, athletes come and go, so there's not a lot of continuity. But I believe that continuity is a big part of how you learn how to train, and probably explaining why we haven't learned too much. Another factor that influences sport education is government funding. And government funding comes up and down depending upon whether we have a home Olympics or not in our country. And other factors, you know, we have the political parties change, the political beliefs change, etc. So the continuity in sport education is disrupted. For example, if they learned a lot during the period of the Soviet Union and in the period of East Germany, well, you know, a lot of that would have been lost. So that's an example of loss of continuity. So I think these are some of the reasons why we might not have learned as much as we could have over the last three decades.
Thanks for that insight. It's definitely not something you learn in university, where you're taught that basically every 2 years there's everything new and everything changed and new insights, cutting edge information. Now let's say you're a coach and you want to go the path of really, really improving your athletes and improving the industry in general. What steps would you suggest to be the best coach you can be?
There's a number of things that you can develop as a coach, but probably the first thing I'd say is you need to treat yourself in the same way that you would expect someone else to behave. So when we expect discipline from our athletes, we expect positive attitude, we expect determination. And it is not fair or realistic to expect these things in others unless we are living them ourselves. So the first step for success in coaching, in my opinion, is to be the same person, or be that highly successful person that you want your athletes to be. The second key that I believe is success in sport comes from developing a culture of success. And culture isn't developed overnight, but the development of a culture is key to the long-term development. And thirdly, I believe a long-term plan is important, and obviously we don't always get a long-term with the athletes, but I believe long-term planning is critical. And fourthly, I'll add that generally the way the coach treats the athlete, we assume that athletes don't always do their best, and I don't agree with that. I believe that athletes do their best. Whether or not it was good enough on the day is another thing, but to have that negative attitude towards athlete and treat them as if they didn't do their best, it really does kill the coach-athlete relationship. So I would recommend supporting an athlete's effort. They're out there, they're making an effort, and for whatever reason, if they don't come out at top, then it's a lesson. There's something to be learned. There's a discussion to be had, and the result we get in sport is simply telling us where we are now. The only question remains is, do we get jaded about that, disillusioned, or do we look at ways to get better? And so I guess the fifth key would be always look for ways to do it better. Back to you, Andy.
That's great. And I've been to a couple of KSI seminars and also the boot camp in Australia, which is great insight into that. Now we started the new level one course for all coaches, not just physical preparation coaches, this year. And can you briefly talk about what's different with KSI events as opposed to formal education or other programs, and why people should go to the level one course?
Well, fundamentally, I believe what we do is very different, because what we do is based upon my 30 years of learning from the athlete and learning how to win and why we lose. And it is not content that it's biased by culture, it's not biased by commercial interest, it's not biased by any other factor other than what's best for athletic results. So I think the underlying difference is that, as far as the content goes. Now, the second thing I want to talk about is that, secondly, I do continue to strive to make it better. And one of the key things that we've done recently to improve that is a recognition that most coaches fail before they start, in that I've identified a number of steps to successful coaching, and from a very fundamental and very basic perspective, we begin with our delivery, how we deliver the information to the athlete. And that is our starting point in level one. Level two, we go and we look at the content, and level three, we look at the interpretation, and that is a very complex area. But I believe that if you lose the athlete, if you undermine the outcome at the very start, then it wouldn't matter how good the content or how good your interpretation was. You've basically lost the opportunities in the way it's delivered. And I've been involved with an incredible number of sports over very many years, and watched a lot of different cultures and how they implement. And this one common denominator in sport delivery, and that is it can be done so much better. So the aim of our level one is to give any coach the opportunity to improve the way they deliver. And I've taken techniques from a variety of industries. I've taken techniques that I've developed, and I'm teaching them to coaches who want to learn, because the minute you change the way you deliver, it changes the way the athlete receives the information. So it is the starting point for coach education from a practical perspective. And this again makes us unique, because nobody teaches practically, the practical side of coaching, the way we can and we do. And that's why I think it's a great opportunity for coaches to do our level one. And I can guarantee them that they will be blown away by what they even didn't realize that they might have been doing to undermine their success as coach at the delivery level. And this applies to, I'm just not just talking about physical preparation coaches, I'm talking about coaches in all sports, at all levels, either gender, any culture. It's common to coaching. So there's some insights for you, Andy.
Thanks. I just said you there for all coaches. One feedback that I sometimes get at courses anywhere is that there are a lot of volunteer coaches around here in Austria, and they basically say all seminars and all workshops and everything that's going on, that they're just volunteering, so that they're not educating themselves or going to courses. It's too expensive, too much time involved, because they're just doing it as a side. And I know that you made a video clip about that. Can you just talk briefly about that?
Well, I recognize that, and I applaud them as volunteer coaches, and volunteer coaching occurs right throughout the world. I do volunteer coaching every day of the week, and always have. So volunteer coaching is the foundation of our sporting program. That's a subject in itself. But my question to volunteer coaches is that, when is the word volunteer and the word excellence opposed? When are they mutually exclusive? Why would a volunteer assume that anything less than excellence is okay? Because over and above my personal preference for excellence, most volunteers are working with kids or at the lower level of sport. Now, the window of opportunity for change is greatest for the young athlete than it is for an older athlete. When we give top coaches only at the end of an athlete's career, we're not having the same impact as if we had excellence in coaching at the start of the career. So whether you're getting paid or not, for me, it's irrelevant. Do you want to give the best you can to the athletes you work with? And if you do, I would encourage you to educate. Obviously, what form of education you take is up to you. But Personally, I see no excuse for a volunteer coach to say, hey, I'm a volunteer, this is as good as it gets. If it was you, would you be satisfied as a young athlete with that coach having that attitude? If it was your children, would you be satisfied? And I think the answer is no. So treat your athletes as if they were you in a younger form, or treat them as if they were your kids. And I believe that you may change your values about striving for excellence in coaching.
Yeah, what I often see is that volunteer coaches actually are just volunteer because they don't believe they can go professional. For example, here in Austria, the average pay for a coach is really, really low. It's probably lower than for a cleaning woman. So not a lot of people are prepared to take this step.
Well, you've heard you say it before. There's no real difference. In fact, the only real difference between a volunteer and a professional coach is one's getting paid. There's no suggestion by anybody that the professional coach is actually a better coach. They might want you to believe that, but I can tell you from my experience, there's no guarantee. Some of the best coaches in the world are volunteer coaches. So certainly don't let the concept of money stand in your way of greatness.
Excellent. So going a little bit specific to Austria here, because you've been here last year for a couple of days, the trends you earlier talked about in the world, are they reflected in Austria as well, when you see the strengths and weaknesses of Austrian coaches as well as athletes?
Well, I believe it's very consistent across the world. Historically, some countries go through periods of higher funding or higher focus on coach education, etc., etc. And you know, Canada went through that period back there in the late 80s. And Australia went through that period, perhaps in the early 90s. And it typically correlated with upcoming nationalistic sporting events like the Olympic or Commonwealth Games in their country. But generally speaking, humans are humans. It doesn't matter what colour our skin is, or what language we have, or our cultural temperature, or you know, the clothes we wear. We're all humans, and therefore the same patterns are going to exist. There are definitely cultural trends, but generally speaking, the same patterns exist. So yes, Andy, I see commonality right throughout the world. And as you know, I've had the opportunity and the honour of coaching in most countries in the world.
Is probably best known for its success in skiing, but what I see is lots and lots of injured skiers around here, and they're still winning. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because when I coach in a sport that's dominated by another country, the conclusion is that whatever they're doing in that dominant country must be the best, and we all need to do it. You know, I face that in skiing, and I work with Olympic skiers in three different countries. I face that in diving, in preparing Australia's national diving team for Olympics in relation to, you know, look what the Chinese are doing, etc. And this is my observation. In country like Austria, you have two major advantages. Number one, your kids will ski younger and more often. That's a massive advantage. And on that point, the athletes that I've been worked with in skiing that were from other countries typically had more skiing exposure as children. For example, one Australian girl I worked with who created some history in the Olympics, from an Australian perspective, she grew up in France. So you have a massive advantage there that you have more frequent and earlier exposure to snow. I mean, in Canada, they're flat out getting a few months of snow, and the quality and the height is not always as good. So you have an advantage. But secondly, the numbers. You have so many. And there's a saying in sport from a universal athlete preparation perspective that we throw the eggs against the wall, and the ones that don't break are the ones that make it. And I'd suggest that that's what's happening in Austria, and I suggest that's what's happening in many countries where they're succeeding through what I call volume of athletes and cultural superiorities. Like if I do well in diving, I won't have to go to the salt mines in Siberia. So there are a number of cultural reasons why you succeed, and but mostly it is due to the volume. And I too have seen many Austrian athletes and I've worked with many Austrian coaches. So I am very familiar with the Austrian attitude towards training and ski training in particular. And with no intent to be disrespectful to my Austrian colleagues, I do it differently. And when I'm working with a country that has far less skiers at that level, we have to do it differently. If we start with 10 skiers and we break 9 of them, we're not going to go anywhere. You have hundreds of skiers. You can break 90% of them, and you still have more of the skiers than most other countries. So that, in my opinion, is the difference. It's not necessarily superiority in training. You have some cultural superiorities, some benefits, and you have numbers.
Well, let's say I'm an athlete and I don't want to be among the ones that are broken and don't make it to the top. How do I choose a coach that helps me with that, and what are the things I need to do to stay out of that problem?
Well, the interesting thing is we all have intuition, and athletes are very intuitive. Athletes know intuitively when the coach is asking too much of them. Now, that unfortunately can be overridden by the athlete's emotional drive to do more or do more. Have I done enough? What if I haven't done enough? What if I get on at the starting gate and I haven't done enough? So there's a lot of fear in the athlete. So I would encourage them to be controlled in their emotion and ask themselves intuitively, is what the coach doing to me in my best interest to succeed at the peak of my career? The peak of my career being the average window of opportunity for top success in sport. And for, you know, most skiers, it's not 14, it's a little later. So I believe the athlete has the power. It's where the athlete has the desire or the willingness to use your intuition. Then it might take some courage to not necessarily go against the coach, but to seek some guidance outside of the coaching, immediate coaching relationship. And I've worked with many athletes who we just quietly did things and help them control the coach emotionally and help them control the coach tactically and technically. So there are many ways around it, but it will never happen if the athlete doesn't recognize their intuitive doubts about what is happening to their body from the way they are being trained.
Thanks for that. One challenge that I see, not just in Austria, but mainly here as well, there are not any athlete facilities here, so most athletes train in general health clubs, and there's lots of music and distractions around. Do you have some strategies and tips how one athlete can make the best out of this situation and create a good training atmosphere?
Yeah, I think facilities to some extent are very overrated. I know the Americans make a lot of marketing media about the Soviet this and Soviet that back in the day, and I doubt the Soviet facilities were very, very good at all. I really don't think the correlation between facilities and being a world champion is very high. If it was, America would win everything, because they've got the best facilities in the world across the board. And you know that they're not the world champions of everything. In fact, one Olympics, their basketball team couldn't even get a medal. So I think we know, despite their desire to call themselves world champion in every national sport they play, they're far from. So I don't get too concerned by that. Obviously, if you are in a health facility, you need to cut off a little bit yourself from what everyone else is doing. And that is a little bit tough, because the sociologists and psychologists would tell us we all like to mirror image each other. So it is important that they create their own environment within that environment, or even seek private training facilities to train. But it definitely can be done. It's just very important not to be caught up in what everyone else in the fitness facility is doing, because they're being influenced by trends, and you don't want to be a trend trainer as an athlete. You want to be guided by the best advice for your sport. So it's definitely doable, Andy. You just need to be prepared to be a little bit different. You know, dress a little bit differently and behave a little bit differently, and you'll focus a little bit differently than everyone around you.
Insights. Do you have any things coming up that you want to share with other listeners?
Well, we've always got things happening, Andy, as you know, but generally speaking, I do encourage people, if they are a coach or involved in the coaching profession, to have a look at our coach education. We are not influenced by anything other than what is best for the athlete, and athletes who work with us find that out very quickly. That is not a marketing line. That is just the way it is, and the way it has been for 30 years in our business, and the way it will always be, where the athlete comes first, figuratively and literally. So, in addition to the coaching program, we're always developing other little coach education ideas, as well as our existing books and videos, etc. And I have produced what I would describe as the largest range of self-published coach education material in the world that is based on true coaching experience and true coaching success. So that opportunity is there for anybody to become a better coach. And as I said, every day I'm out there helping coaches, and working with coaches and working as a coach, and always happy to help people improve as a coach, and obviously for the athlete to fulfill their potential. In fact, I think in most cases we can help them exceed their own expectations. So that is my focus on a daily basis, and we encourage anyone who shares those same values to get involved with what we do.
Great. So thanks, Ian, for your time and for the interview.
You're welcome, Andy. Guten Tag.